Tonight's episode of the Football Out West show is proudly sponsored by CMF Soccer Coaching.
You're listening to the Football Out West show on FNR Football Nation Radio. Proudly brought to you by Georgie's on Vista, the new home of the George Cross Soccer Club.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to episode 3 of the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. My name is Tonchi Prusak, and next to me is a man who truly has a face for radio, Craig Filer. How are you, Craig?
Very good, Tonchi.
Pot calling the kettle black. Exactly, yeah. That's right. That's why I hide strategically behind this kind of microphone, hoping to hide each week.
Here we go.
It doesn't really do anything. Mate, what a show tonight. Like, we talked, last week was a big show. We had Danny Tiato. We had Point Cook Soccer Club as a club focus. But tonight, we've basically done an entire 60 minutes of focus on just junior development. Mate, start from A to Z and tell us the calibre or the quality of the guests that we've got tonight.
Yeah, look, I think we're very fortunate tonight in our focus on youth development. And timing's always a wonderful thing, as we know. For the first part of the segment, we're going to have, lucky enough, as I said, we're going to have three Cardiff City coaches who are travelling over here in Australia at the moment. They've been in Sydney for a couple of days. They're down here for a couple of days doing some coaching clinics. So they'll be in to talk about, you know, life within an EPL club in the UK and life within an academy. And then after that, we've got a fantastic guest in the new FFA technical director of the FFA, which is fantastic to get him on the show.
So. Rob Sherman, yeah. He's a big name, and it is just going to be awesome. Now, some of those guys from Cardiff City, Scott Young, he'll be our first guest. He'll be talking about him. We've got this amazing Josh Parrish. We've totally forgot with all this talk about all these guests. We've forgotten our panel operator, Josh Parrish. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited about the lineup tonight.
Yeah,
and,
tell you what,
reliving a few of Scott Young's career highlights on YouTube.
There wasn't many.
Well, just the one, you know, the famous one. We were going to bring that out later, which should be fun, but also very excited to have Rob Sherman on the program. He's got a task on his hands, I think.
Massive.
Appointment. Australia was without a technical director for quite some time, which kind of boggles the mind, but he's the man stepping into the big job, and you know, hopefully, I'm sure he's up to it. I'd love, really interested to hear from him.
Yeah, he'll be coming in around about halfway through the tonight's show, but until then, before then, we'll be talking to Scott Young, Tom Ramasut, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, and Nathan McConville. These guys are just, you know, just tell us a bit about them, you know, very, very sort of a elevator pitch kind of thing. Craig, let's start with Scott. I mean, he played for
Yeah, Scott played for the Cardiff club for almost 19 years, I think, over 300 games scoring. He says more than 22 goals, but 22 goals down as what he had. He's had a Wales under 21 cap. He's also a Wales senior squad member. Made his first team appearance in 1993 against Stockport, and finished up in 2003 with a persistent back injury. And you know, he went on to manage a couple of clubs within the Welsh league structure, and then and we'll talk about that later on. But he took over the reins at Cardiff City when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's now the Manchester United head coach, took over from him. So we'll talk to Scott about that. And then we got Tom. He's the current Cardiff City head of coaching in the academy. Played ex-Norwich City, Bristol Rovers player. Played a couple of semi-professional clubs. And then you've got Nathan McConville, who's Nathan the Nugs McConville. We'll get that in because he'll crucify me if I don't say that. He's been at Cardiff for 5 years, and he's the head of the pre-academy, so the 5 to 9 year olds.
Yeah,
so
I'm really going to be interested to hear Nathan's take on all this, because we always talk about one of the big problems here in Australian football is that almost that pre-academy, or not the pre, in this case, the pre-academy is 5 to 8 years old, but pre-NPL, mm-hmm. if we want to talk about it. And we talked about it on many occasions, that pre-NPL, are the kids here in Australia technically astute? Are they getting enough guidance? Is the coaching the way it should be? Yeah, look, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned, because we are going to have an unbelievable show for you tonight. We're going to, shall we go through the news desk, or?
Entirely up to you whether you want to do it or whether you want to get straight in.
We might miss it this week. What we'll try and do is we'll try and do a summary of the news desk on our Facebook page, Football Out West News, because we have got so much to get through. We're going to take a quick break, and then what we're going to do is we're going to bring Scott into the studio and we'll have a chat to him.
The Change Rooms.
Welcome back to the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Our first guest joins us tonight, Scott Young, a former Cardiff City player, legend. He's now the club ambassador and coaches within the club's academy. But he also took over the reins, Scott, as caretaker manager of Cardiff City in 2014 after the departure of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it was obviously... turned up at the academy one morning and got a call from one of the directors, Steve Bawley, as I was driving down the motorway. And he just says, yeah, what's your plans for the weekend? Who are you taking? I said, oh, the under-18s. He said, I'll do us a favour. Obviously, we've got rid of the manager today. Would you mind taking the team? And obviously, as a hometown boy of Cardiff City, it was a great pleasure and a great experience.
And what was your first game? Do you remember it?
Yeah, our first game. We took over, well, it was a Thursday afternoon, but by the time we got to the training ground, and we played with Derby County away on the Saturday.
And the score?
2-2. Obviously, we didn't get much time to prep for the game. We missed the training session on the Thursday, so we had the one session on the Friday morning, and then travelled up on the bus in the afternoon and played Derby on the Saturday and drew 2-2 after being 2-0 up. Slightly disappointing, but to pit your wits against Steve McLaren, it was a great experience.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, some of the teams that you have managed, obviously, apart from Cardiff City, Newport County, you were the assistant manager there, AFC Porth in the Welsh League, and Port Talbot also in the Welsh Premier League. Was it different, obviously, clubs with different dimensions and different requirements, if you like? Mm. How was it, you know, changing your style, adapting your style, or did you sort of maintain a similar type of coaching style throughout?
No, I mean, when you manage Cardiff City compared to the other clubs you just mentioned there, it's a different ballgame. Obviously, we were thrown in at the sort of top end of the Championship, you know, at the time, and you know, it's a lot easier to be managing at that level when you've got good players. And you can coach every day. I mean, when you're a part-time manager, it's hard to affect the team because you only got a couple of hours a week. When you're working full-time at the top end of the game, it's a lot more enjoyable. Obviously, a lot more pressure and a lot more that goes with it. But in terms of working with the players, it's a easier experience.
And the experience obviously didn't last that long. You had a couple of games in charge, and then obviously Russell Slade came in as the manager. From a coaching point of view, and having been a pro and obviously became a caretaker manager, aspirations to get back into that?
Yeah, certainly, I think so. Obviously, when I took over as caretaker, it was a massive job for me. It's my club. You know, I've been there 30 years, and after being there for 2 years as assistant manager, I've had a nice little break now, sort of regathered my thoughts and the way I want to go, and I'm certainly ready for another crack at it.
Now, you're the club ambassador for Cardiff City. What does that involve?
A number of things. My general working week is obviously working with the academy lads and different teams within the academy and individuals and things like that. Then work through two other different departments, obviously the international department at the club, which brings me to Australia. We're there. We do a lot of work in China as well. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the club's foundation, which is the grassroots side of it, and do quite a bit of work in local communities as well in South Wales.
Now, you're out here actually for a series of coaching clinics at the Point Cook Soccer Club. Craig, you want to tell us a bit more about that, because obviously you're involved with that.
So Scott and the guys are over for the next, in fact, they've been here since Sunday, but they're here for the next 3 days, 4 days. Starting tomorrow, we have a clinic based down in Point Cook that's it's got over 50 young players coming for an experience of really seeing and understanding what it's like to be coached by, top European coaches. And that's a great experience for them. So, you know, it's great for Scotty. He's gone from running Cardiff City and replacing Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer, and now coming over and working for CMF Soccer for 4 days. So he's really gone down in the world over the last couple of years. But look, we're really pleased to get them over. It's the second time they've come over. The boys that came in January had a great time. They learnt a lot. And 95% of the players that came in January have signed up for this one. So it's really is about an opportunity for them to get better coaching. For 3 or 4 days and see what it's like to be coached by these guys.
Yeah. What are you most looking forward to, Scott, with regards to this? You know, obviously coaching kids is a little bit different to coaching professionals and watching it. But is it, you know, that level of enthusiasm, that unbridled joy of, kids seeing they pull off a nice little nutmeg or something like that and you've taught them or something like that? Does it give you just as much joy as, you know, playing or coaching with the professionals?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, that's why we work in the academy as well. You know, we get great pleasure from watching these young kids learn and improve on a daily basis. So, yeah, certainly from a personal point of view, it's fantastic to be out here coaching these young kids. But I think it's important from a club's point of view as well, for the brand awareness side of it, for me coming to Australia and see young Australian players wearing the Cardiff City shirt. It'll be a proud moment for us as well. Like Craig said, it's our second time in Australia. We're doing a little bit in Sydney as well when we go back. So hopefully, you know, over the next few years, because that's where we're about to Cardiff City is, we're not here for the short term. Hopefully we won't be here for the long term and grow many partnerships in and around Melbourne with Point Cook and continue to grow that. And hopefully we can keep coming back and seeing lots of young players.
Yeah. Now, you had a blessed career. You had a very good career. Over 300 games, scoring 22 goals for Cardiff City. Was coaching and getting into, you know, coaching after your playing career finished, was that something that was always on the cards or something you always wanted to do? Or is that something that just sort of, once you stopped playing, you thought to yourself, nah, I want to still stay involved with this game?
Yeah, like you say, I was very privileged to have a decent career. But unfortunately for myself, I got cut short with an injury. Mm. Retired at the age of 28. And then you go back into the big open world and what are you going to do next? And started doing my badges and started coaching and started enjoying it and sort of made another pathway for myself.
Absolutely. It's taking you to the other side of the world, down under.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that, the conversations that we had were only a year ago about doing something here. So, you know, we've come a long way in the year. This is the second time, as we said. And, you know, I think it just gives... you know, for me, and the show's all about development tonight. It's about giving these youngsters an idea of what it's like to be coached, because we have coaches here, good, bad, and indifferent. But effectively, we're going to be coached by top European coaches. So,
now we might have a little bit of a break, and we'll bring Tom and Nathan into the studio and have a little bit of a conversation with them. But after that, then we'll be also going up to or connecting with Sydney, and we'll be calling Rob Sherman live from Sydney, and he's the technical director. So if you are watching, do drop us a comment, a suggestion, a question for any one of the above mentioned lads in the Facebook Live chat, or either on FNR, the Football Nation Radio Facebook page, or the Football Out West, because it'll be very interesting. We'd love to get your questions and really have an interactive forum, because that's what our plan is for the second half of the show. But Scott, any last words you'd like to say before we bring the other two on?
No, I mean, from a football club and Cardiff City's point of view, it's a great privilege to be here in Australia, getting an opportunity to coach these young lads, and hopefully in the future there'll be opportunities for young Australian players to come and experience what it's like to train and play at Cardiff City. That's another opportunity myself and Craig and a few others are discussing at the moment, to get a few groups over and see how we work on a day-to-day basis.
Awesome. Now we're going to take a little bit of a break, Josh, and when we return then, we'll have Tom and Nathan join us in the studio.
Cardiff currently 53 places below Leeds on the league ladder. Slipping it through for Viduka. Chance for Leeds. Goal for Leeds. Emphatic from Mark Viduka in the 12th minute to try and finish it off Cardiff's way. And he does get there. Yes! It's Young for Cardiff. 4 minutes to go. It is from a set piece. And this time Leeds had no answer. The defender who got 10 goals last season comes up one with one here in the third round of the FA Cup that could wipe out Leeds United from the competition.
Well, he talked about Fortune West contributing. My goodness, he does here. It's not a brilliant header, but David Batty's unable to deal with it. Was it going wide? Did David need to touch it? Probably. But it bounces up off his shins. And my God, Scott Young just smashes it into the net. What a story this is turning out to be.
There you go. That was our esteemed guest from the first segment, Scott Young, reliving some of the glory days back in the day. You're listening to the Football Out West show here on Football Nation Radio, and gee, have we got some football royalty all the way from Wales here in the studio tonight? Craig, you're next to me.
Am I in?
I'll let you introduce the two gentlemen to your right.
Okay. Well, we have the pleasure of welcoming Tom Ramasat, who's the Cardiff City head of coaching at the academy.
Yep, that's right.
And we have Nathan McConville, who's the head coach of the under fives to nines and the assistant lead phase in the 11s.
Yep,
11s foundation course. So, welcome, guys. Thanks for coming on. And over the next 5 or 10 minutes, we'll just chat to you about the club.
Yep.
Your roles within the club. What you do differently within the academy that most local teams get.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously we'll get Rob on and we'll try and have a bit of a link up with all of us to talk about where Australia's going to go. So,
Tom, first of all, over to you, mate. You're currently the Cardiff City Academy's head of coach.
Yeah.
You've been there for 3 years, but you've also been coaching at the Cardiff City Academy now for 8 years. That's a long time. Have you seen much changes in the caliber of players coming through, or the quality of the program itself? Any changes that you've seen, good or bad, I suppose?
Yeah, I think nearly all of it is positive.
Mm-hmm.
The academy system and player development in the whole of the UK, England, Wales, has massively moved forward in the last sort of 2 decades. I think the Premier League and then the sort of money that's filtered down has really sort of made a difference in the academy since the academies have been set up. So Cardiff being one of those clubs on that journey, it's certainly sort of each year has progressed and has improved, and therefore the sort of the coaching has improved. And then hopefully then we've seen the players sort of coming through and developing. And the standard and the quality, I think, increases every year.
What's the main focus as far as, like, is there anything in particular? Is it the skill? Is it the structured game plans? Is it anything in particular that the academy as a whole sort of tries to concentrate on, or a bit of this, bit of that? What are your priorities, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
As a club, as an academy especially, we are sort of united in a playing philosophy and a philosophy as all the way through from the under sort of nines, or even the younger ones. Sort of Nathan will touch on that in a minute, all the way up to sort of the youth team, and mm-hmm. then obviously then going into professional contracts. So we try to have that consistency of approach, of a philosophy, all the way through the academy. Then if you go into the detail of that further, then that's broken down into the four corners, we would call it. So it's technical, tactical, physical, and then social, psychological. So they're the areas, obviously, then we would look at, and then we would have a sort of plan, an academy plan, that covers all those areas of development.
So within the academy structure, so you say really from 9s through to 15, 16s?
Nines,
the philosophy of the of that eight, philosophy.
18s. So with Cardiff City, all the academy is on one site. So from the 9s all the way up to under 18s, the under 23s also falls under the academy umbrella, but they're situated with the first team. So what they do is more dictated by the first team, and then sort of under 18s down, we have much more sort of I suppose control over. Yeah. And then that's how we sort of try and have the whole program aligned.
Okay, so is it different from the academy structure? Then you get to 23s and seniors. Is it then a different style within? Does it change dramatically, or do they still try and link that back to what the academy is doing?
Well, like I said, I can't speak too much about that in terms of, because obviously it is dictated by the first team because they're on the same site.
Yeah.
We have a sort of academy coaches there, so we have an element of kind of continuity there.
Okay.
But they have to start getting prepared for the first team. So they'll be training with the first team. They'll be crossover there. And they might be, you know, there's first team players dropping down into the 23s, playing games and training there. So there needs to be quite a lot of sort of unity between those two sort of squads.
Nathan, you're currently the head of the pre-academy. So that's the 5 to 8 year olds and the assistant lead foundation for the phase for the 9s to 11 year olds. Now, I notice here in your little biography, you've got an A license coach, Advanced Youth Award, Bachelor of Science in Honours degree in Sports Coaching and Performance. When you coach the 5, 6, 7 year olds, does that all go out the window and you just have to assume a de facto dad sort of a status? Or how does that go? How disciplined are those kids at that stage?
Yeah, it's a very different approach to what you learn on the A license and things like the Advanced Youth Award. Through the FA has got three different stages. Mm-hmm. So there's the foundation phase, Advanced Youth Award, the youth development phase and the professional development phase. So like Tom has done the youth development phase one, I've done the foundation phase one, which is very specific to our age groups. But in terms of the A license coaching, it's more, I think the A license gives you the knowledge of football and the principles and things that you want to instill rather than stuff you're actually going to do with the little ones, you know what I mean?
But at that stage, is it still very structured, like the program itself, or is it more just have fun and you just make it up as you go?
The 5s to 8s are slightly different. The pre-academy is recruitment-based. So from under 5 to under 8, we develop, identify all the best players in South Wales and England for us to then recruit. They officially sign their contract at under 9. So in England, nobody can sign until under 9. So the 5s to 8s is about identifying the best players. That's just small-sided games, 2v2s through to 5v5. And then at under 9, we start to, as Tom has said, put the coaching philosophy into them, the structure, things like that. But again, the whole foundation phase up to 11s, we would say, is more street than structure. You know, it's very individual-focused. It's just players really falling in love with the ball, the game. It's not overly tactical. We do start to implement bits and pieces sort of from under 9 up, but it's a gradual process through the system, and it's more focused on individuals and technical at the younger ages.
And how often do you get them in to get them coached?
That was going to be my next question. Good on you. Yeah.
So little ones from 9s to 11s, we've got them in 5 times a week. We're one of only 4 clubs in the UK that has a day release system. So we take the kids out of school every Wednesday. They're with us for the full day. So they play 5 hours football and they've got 3 hours of school with us. So the total contact hours in the week is like 12 to 14 hours depending on
games. See, that's what we're up against, Craig. That's exactly what we're up against, you know. We've got mini roos here that's under 7s are 4v4, under 9s are 7v7, under 11s are 9v9. And, you know, most of the clubs, I think, train twice?
You'd be lucky to get them for 3 hours or 4 hours.
Some train once a week and whatever the case may be. And you know, and that's great to hear that over there you have them 5 times a week for a 10 to 12 hour contact time.
But even more than that, and Tonshin will touch on it with Rob later on because I'm sure that's going to be part of his remit going forward, is it's the game situation as well. So for an under 9 side, and I'm pretty privileged to know what this is, but what would an under 9s play in a particular season? How many games would they actually play?
Yeah, so we're
under
the
academy structure.
Our under 9s this year have just finished, I think, all in. Now, bear in mind, not every player plays in every game because we balance squads out and things, but I think they've played the equivalent of like 85 games, and our Haas players played in 77 of them or something like that.
So they'd have 85 games and they would train 5 days a week off.
Yeah, so yeah. The way it works is we train either three or four times a week and then either one or two games on the weekend. So yeah. Five contacts as such with the yeah. games incorporated in that.
And that's clearly the difference. That we haven't got those, when we haven't got facilities, when we haven't got those kids. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, I'd just like to sort of pitch in there, because we have a lot of discussions in the office about this, and that will be quite, like Nathan said, we're the only one who has a day release in terms of one of the only ones in the foundation phase. And we've made a conscious effort in the last two seasons to really drive the games programme. I see you got written down there. That's probably not the norm across the board. It's probably something that we feel that sort of age is something that we could set ourselves aside from the rest. So it wouldn't be the norm across the board.
But you'd still be talking 60 games plus, wouldn't you?
I think most clubs in the foundation phase is three trainings a week and then one or two games on the weekend. So I'd say your average is probably about 40.
Okay.
Yeah, 40
still,
games,
still double what we're getting. Yeah.
So it's like over, a 40-week season or thereabouts? Or
Yeah, 42.
I'm so jealous.
Obviously, time's cracking on with us, but I just want to go into part of, obviously, the FA's programme is the EPPP, mm-hmm. which is the Elite Player Performance Plan.
Yeah.
Obviously, that runs at Cardiff.
Yeah.
I think it runs through all the professional clubs, with the exception of three or four that pulled out a few seasons ago due to costs and things. Has that had a big impact on the academy structures and how they all operate? Because I would imagine now that they're all operating on the same system.
It's a huge yeah. impact. It's kind of revolutionary in terms of academy and player development. There's a big change this season. So previously the EPPP, we'd get audited by a company called Double Pass, mm-hmm. And it was much more like they would come every three seasons. And it would be like a 5-day, and it'd scrutinise everything you did, and it'd be kind of black and white. You've passed or failed on certain criteria, which meant a lot of the clubs were heavily structured and had a lot of the kind of structures and processes in place. So there was definitely a real benefit of that. The sort of downside was it was like, you know, you're gearing up to those 5 days, it was a little bit kind of like pass the test and then we can relax and get back to our normal kind of sort of every day. So what's changed now is the Premier League has taken that over, and it's going to be much more of a consultative process, and you're going to be working sort of together with the Premier League, mm-hmm. with the FA, with the EFL, and a much more supportive role. And I think that's going to take it on even further. But certainly the EPPP, there's a lot of debate about it in our country, huge debate, especially with the bigger clubs. And I think the Double Pass, in terms of all the work that you had to do to that 5 days, that was a big issue. Mm-hmm. But they've taken that away now, so I think it's going to become even better in terms of a more efficient and effective how they're going to work it now with the Premier League.
Well, we're going to have a continuation of that debate after the break, because we're going to, on the line, we've got the Football Federation Australia Technical Director, Rob Sherman. He's going to join us, and we're going to have a nice forum. And Josh and myself, we're going to be the odd ones out, because we're not Welsh, but we'll pretend we are. Is that right?
You've got a Welsh name.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Tonchi could be a Welsh name for
Tonchi
tonight.
Tonchi Jones.
Okay. You're listening to the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to the Football Out West show on FNR Football Nation Radio, proudly brought to you by Georgie's on Vista, the new home of the George Cross Soccer Club.
Welcome back to the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Craig, the next guest is a big one. Every week we just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, mate, I'll let you introduce our next guest.
Yes, another special guest for us tonight, and I suppose we're very lucky to welcome the new FFA Technical Director, football guru, Rob Sherman. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, well, Rob. Rob Tonchi here in the studio along with Craig and our esteemed guests from Wales. And I was just saying to Josh, we're the odd ones out. It's all Welsh-themed tonight, but I'm happy to with a name like Tonchi. That could pass as a Welsh name in some parts of Wales, could it?
No doubt, mate. No doubt at all. Uh-huh. I hope you can interpret for the rest of us, though.
I'll try. Mate, thank you for joining us. It's an absolute privilege having you on the show. You're coming to us live from Sydney, where you're obviously up there for work related reasons. Let's talk about. First of all, let's talk about the recent review that was announced in the player pathways in Australia. And there's some amazing names on there. Tell us a little bit about that, because you were the main architect, weren't you, behind creating something like that?
Yeah, I mean, the focus was I set up an academy panel and just invited some people specifically to look at. It's interesting on the back of your last question about the EPPP, simply to look at criteria. So it's not an overall football review of the pathway. It is specifically around what the academy criteria should focus in on and what the critical factors are. So possibly, you know, the press announcement made it more encompassing. We'll be doing a much more thorough consultation across all the stakeholders when we get to that stage. This was solely about looking what are the critical factors that we need to have in place in terms of criteria if we're going to measure and start to lead through our, you know, through an academy program and rolling that out. So that's what the focus was about and is about for that particular panel.
Now, in the press release that was issued out on the 19th of June by FFA, it says when you looked at overseas models and you saw elite youth players experiencing a development environment that Australian clubs have struggled to match, we touched on that with the Cardiff City lads here, and we spoke, Craig and I were just flabbergasted when we heard the amount of contact time that the kids were having in Wales at Cardiff City as opposed to, say, you know, a traditional club or club environment here, where kids would be lucky to be training two times a week plus game day, and that's, what, 15, 16 games a year. Is that one of the things, amongst other things, that you've noticed with the academy system at the moment, that we're just not... kids are not training enough?
Well, I think that's a massive factor. Ultimately, you know, a 40 to 46 week program would be standard, you know, minimum of 4+1 throughout the whole period would be something to aim for. I expect the Cardiff boys are possibly on to 5+1. And when I say 4+1, that's 4 contacts, but that might include and then might be other work that you do, which is non-football field related. So that would constitute other sessions. I think that's a massive factor. If you accumulate that over 6 or 7 years, then that's a phenomenal difference between a shorter season and less contact.
Yeah, well I'm sure there's going to be a lot of issues that you have to resolve, Rob, and no doubt it's going to be a long-term process for you. But you just said then you've got 42 to 46 week season. The facilities that we have over here currently don't allow a 42 week season. So that's one of the key areas, I suppose, that, you know, has to be recognised, and how the local councils can help the development of football, because they closed down for best part of 3 months through the summer period, and nobody can get on a football pitch. So, you know, that cuts 3 months out of the 42 weeks. So, look, that's one area that we are going to struggle with, I believe.
I think if you take the whole game, you know, you take the whole spectrum, obviously. You know, traditionally football runs in the March to September window, and then other sports take over into the summer period. I think, you know, really, if you're talking of addressing the whole game, that's a massive issue, especially on the numbers raising. So I think the facilities discussions that are going on about increasing facilities, making sure that football can cater for the interest that's been shown in the game, that discussion is happening across, you know, all bodies, and I think that's a very important one because it is a critical issue. Ultimately, the game won't be able to cope with the numbers that want to play if you can't access can't access a facility. I think in the academy space, obviously, when you're looking at Cardiff City, I mean, at some stage, maybe down the Vale at Glamorgan, I think you're developing a facility at Llanrymly now. So after you've, and obviously with the university up in the Forest, I mean, facilities is has been a challenge, but that was the major thrust of the academy program in its early days, was it was all facility driven in terms of the criteria. So it's something that needs to be addressed without any shadow of a doubt. And, you know, at the sort of higher end of the spectrum, that's achievable. I think it becomes more difficult as you move into grassroots.
Of course, and I suppose the ultimate goal is to try and replicate what the ECCC is doing in the UK.
Yeah, you know, and it's got to be at the highest bar, and then you work back through the get through the levels, if you like. So there's three categories in the UK. Maybe there needs to be four here, because ultimately you want to make sure that the, you know, you're encompassing as many providers as you can, but without lowering the bar, if you know what I mean. So I think everyone's got a massive role to play in the game. And, you know, at the grassroots level, it's essential that the kids come in, they enjoy it, they're having fun, they're active, they're highlighting the good bits they do, everyone gets a chance to play. And then, you know, you migrate, or your club gives you the potential to have a better quality coaching on a more regular basis for longer periods in the season. And hopefully then, as we go up the scale, you know, the academy is operating at the high level, the pro game can offer the full remit at the very best level.
Yeah.
Hi, Rob, Scott, you?
Hi, Scott, how are you, mate? All right?
Yeah, very good, very good. Listen, just a quick one. Obviously, it's a vast country, and, you know, where do you start? Obviously, do you start at the bottom in terms of the grassroots stuff or the elite stuff, and or do you start either end and try and meet in the middle? You know, it's a massive job you got on. Just quite interested in, you know, in terms of your small gains to start. He's quite new into the job.
I think, I mean, actually, grassroots football is pretty healthy, I think. I mean, it is a sandwich effect. You have to start at both ends. You have to address the whole game. But there's an awful lot of good stuff that happens out there, the voluntary base. You know, there's a lot of fantastic work that goes on. Kids have got a game every week. Lots of people are putting in unbelievable hours to make things happen. I think there's always a danger we talk in a negative tone and we actually neglect to recognise all the fantastic work that does go on. Yeah. And so that's happening. We need to help them, on their journey. But I think we need to start at the top end. There needs to be actually something as well, at the opposite end. There needs to be something where people can clearly see what top looks like. Yeah. And that we measure it and benchmark it. And I mean, it's interesting, you know, you talked about the ECCC. When was that, 10 years ago, Scott, that was introduced, I think?
Yeah, it wouldn't be far off from there, yeah.
Yeah, and ironically, in 2002, under the European club license, we introduced an auditing system to the League of Wales clubs in 2002.
Yeah.
And I used to go out and audit the clubs twice a year. And as I think it was Josh said, you know, there was criteria, but it actually was using the criteria to actually lead people towards finding the gaps and developing,
yeah,
rather than just the stick. And, you know, okay, it was an amateur game, but some of those clubs actually ran semi-decent programs. Based on the level they were at. So I think that type of process where you put in something where you have criteria, it is strict, it's there for a purpose, but it actually leads people to better development,
yeah,
is the way to go, you know.
Rob, I guess we've got another added problem here in Australia, and they often say Australia, the lucky country, and we've got too many choices. And I guess whereas in Europe, football is the number one sport. Here, football is second, third, fourth, fifth, depending on where you, you know, which state you're in. Is that another problem? Because like when we talk about academies, we're certainly talking commitment. We're certainly talking about cost. We're certainly talking about maybe that being your priority sport. But let's face it, there are a lot of parents out there who've got kids playing, you know, Auskick footy on a Friday night, then they play mini roos or football on a Sunday, and they might do basketball or something else on a Saturday. Is that a problem as well that I guess needs to be factored into the whole equation?
I'm not sure. In all honesty, I think that if kids choose to play plenty of sport and different sports, I don't know if that's the biggest factor. I mean, ultimately, you know, in my own background, and I'm sure people of a certain age, I played lots of different things, but I actually fell in love with football and that took over. And I suppose that's the case where when someone really wants to commit, they've got an environment that actually can help them. So I think that, yeah, we're in a competitive market, but you know, trying to actually exclude other sports isn't probably the way to look at it. It's a case of what does our sport provide that actually leads people to go, it's football for me. And that's the best you can do, really, is actually put the sort of infrastructure in place and the environment in place that they choose football. So, yeah, I'm not sure it is the biggest issue. Yeah, I think it's a case of, you know, we have to put football in a space where it really does attract people and wants to keep and they want to stay.
Yeah. Tom wanted to say something.
Hi, Rob. It's Tom Ramsworth here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks. I think we bumped into each other at the one of the last Cardiff City games. You were chatting with Gavin Reen.
Okay. Yeah, I was. Yeah. Good stuff.
I just wanted to jump in on that point because it is quite a contentious point at the minute. Back in the UK, because with the ECCC, with the hours that has been kind of introduced to the sort of academy game, there's quite a kind of debate at the moment. We have it actually ourselves in the academy itself. It is about early specialisation and late specialisation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a real contentious issue. And you know, there's arguments to say multi-sports is beneficial to the youngster in their pathway up until the age of sort of 13, 14, and then it's becoming a sort of specialisation then in whatever sport you choose. So, but then there's the flip side argument to that is that, you know, get your 10,000 hours in early, and then, you know, you might see the product at the end of it sort of having an impact on that. So there's a real split in the UK about that at the minute. So we've gone on that journey through the ECCC. Mm-hmm. Where it's still not kind of, we still don't know what the best answer is with that.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I mean, again, you know, it's not always a good way to point back to your own upbringing and stuff, but I'm of an age where I basically accumulated 20 hours a week playing football without going into any environment, basically with my mates on the street, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And we played cricket and we did other things besides. And I do think that there was an age came along, and it was probably around that 12, 13 mark where you started to marginalise the other ones and focus on your football. Mm. And again, how many kids actually come all the way through the pathway? How many start with you at 8 and end up in the first team?
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be the worry for me, is that actually we're making it a job too early. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a good debate around that pre-13 to keep the spectrum wide. But I do also think there's a solid evidence that suggests if you just don't accumulate enough time, you have too big a gap. Mm. And maybe that's where that informal play, that's the society has been seriously challenged in informal play, isn't it? Mm. You know, kids are choosing other activities which take them away from just moving and running and jumping and whatever, which, you know, has a whole load of benefits from health to... Mm. You know, interconnected tissue and all those contexts that, you know, it's a big challenge.
Which I seem to think in Australia, that's obviously something that you might have a benefit of, that it's much more sort of outdoor play. You've got the weather all year round. So whereas in the UK, they'd probably stay in more because of obviously the weather, the rain. I don't know if that's a different, obviously, a different culture that's maybe a benefit to you guys.
I think I would say that it's probably diminishing, but it's taken longer to come to that point. So I think, you know, the UK has probably started to experience that. Probably why the academies were set up in the 90s, that they were starting to recognise there were some gaps.
Yeah.
And I think it's in this part of the world with the climate, with the sporting history, sporting culture, it's taken longer, but it is definitely more prevalent, I think, that, you know, children doing less activity generally. And that has an impact in all facets of life, really, doesn't it? As well as just the sporting excellence, if you like.
Yeah, you were talking earlier on about number of hours and the elite side of the game. Now, I was lucky enough to attend the Football Federation Victoria's coach education clinic back in, it was February, and they had Trevor Morgan on. And one of the things that was key for from his speech, if I remember right, that they played in a tournament, and the next time that those boys would be back together was something ridiculous like 280 days before mm-hmm. they're back together. Now, surely that's not healthy. And when you're talking about the number of hours, you're having that big gap between tournaments or getting back together is not beneficial for anybody, especially the elite players. So is that an area of focus? And of course, obviously, with the news this week of the A-League clubs now taking responsibility of the academies, is that going to help or hinder?
Not at all. I don't think it'll hinder at all. I think it's, you know, in essence, just international activity without the underpinning activity is a, you know, it doesn't have the impact it does. So, I mean, as an example, and again, putting this in context, you know, the Centre of Excellence program that Cardiff run under Gavin Tate and the like, and then as it became an academy of Crocs, basically we would have contact internationally with those boys, but they were getting their four or five contacts a week in a quality environment. So when you accumulate that, that's maybe 1,800 contacts over X amount of years. Internationally, we'd have 30. So the work was done at the club. What we might do is give the players an exposure to something a little bit different, which would add 1-2% to their overall development. And so the two go very much hand in hand, and they are very much hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. It doesn't, you know, so you're right. There is a massive void in the international exposure. And, you know, there's a danger that that's been cyclical. So if we have a cycle and we qualify, the activity rolls on. If we don't qualify, it stops. Well, you know, there are challenges. Australia is quite an isolated place. It's expensive to get round to other countries. But that's something that needs to be addressed. It should be cyclical, whatever happens. So in other words, you have a program that runs year in, year out, whether you're in the qualifying age group or not. Very easy in Europe, to be honest. Getting around Europe was cheap. And, you know, member and associations there will take a game at the drop of a hat. It's a lot more of a challenge here, but it's a challenge that needs addressing. You're dead right.
Now, Rob, let's go back to the FFA panel to review the player pathways. You've got some very, very highly credentialed people involved there. Ron Smith, who used to head one of the best academies once upon a time, the Australian Institute of Sport. Craig Moore, who was a product of that. And then Michael Cooper, who was actually on the show prior to this on the Geelong Region Soccer Show, who's also the under-17s assistant coach and was a technical director with Newcastle Jets. But you've also got representatives of the A-League clubs, Stephen McGarry, Kelly Cross, Drew Sherman and Ian Crook there. You had your first meeting recently. How did that all come about? Were there all different viewpoints, some old, some new, I guess? What's the next step for that, and in what direction do you envisage that little panel sort of moving towards?
Well, I think, as I said, the initiation of the panel was to get people who had real experience in youth development. And if you take, obviously, the context of pro academies, there's some, obviously, with experience in the ECCC and some, obviously, from the Australian context. The idea was there to get inputs from all viewpoints, and there was quite an awful lot of consensus. But they were challenged. So the idea was to set the challenge up so that, you know, if I had some concepts, they'd be challenged, which is, you know, I don't want this to be a Rob Sherman vision. It's more of a collective vision. Mm. And in essence, yeah, there was a lot of consensus, a lot of good debate, a lot of consensus. And then obviously we will go, the panel, you know, will revise some of that and synthesize that and test it with a broader input. So it's not going to be, here you go, Australia, this is what we've decided to do. It will be a case of, here's some thoughts, test them again back out into the community and to the federations and the NPL, get their input. And so we end up with something really robust that everyone's had a input in and an opinion on. And so, and then everyone has some ownership over that. So that's, as that evolves, that's what's going to come in the coming months, is the opportunity for people to really hear the consensus, mm-hmm. add their own opinion, test it, and make it more robust. So in essence, we end up with something that the game thinks has got real validity. And when I say the game, that's the whole game.
Absolutely. Here's a question from one of our listeners, and I guess this is addressed to the Cardiff City gents. John Manifafas says, cost, how much do English parents pay to have their kids participate in the academy. John, they're Welsh. They don't know. But a good question nonetheless, because there has been lots and lots of robust discussion and arguments that the NPL system here is just a money grabber. In the Welsh context, what's the average cost for an English or Welsh family over there
for
a kid to be involved in Cardiff
City?
Yeah,
I want to be careful here because I don't want to sort of upset too many people, obviously in Australia. But in the academy systems at home, you know, players don't pay to come and play with the academies. They are selected. Like Nathan said, the recruitment is quite robust. It's quite competitive, and for them to gain a place in the academy is a very difficult thing.
Well, that's go through a process of getting into the academy.
Yeah, so they're selected. However, there are some costs involved in with us as an academy where it's not in others. But that for us, it's kind of things like kit, and we've introduced doing European tours at the end of the season. So there might be some contribution from the parents with that, depending on how many tours that age group have been on and how much it's going to cost. So there might be a small contribution from the parents. But generally speaking, in a professional academy, especially in a category one, they won't pay a penny. It might actually go the other way. And then in a category two, it's few and far between. And then maybe in the category three, when they have less budget, that's when they might start sort of seeing that they're paying for more of a kit and a travel and et cetera.
And would it really be fair to compare the two? It's like comparing apples and oranges here, you know, like the A-League gets $50 million a year TV rights as opposed to $1 billion plus. So there's obviously there's certain things that we would never in a million years be able to emulate what is happening over there in the UK. But having said that, nonetheless, I'm guessing there are a lot of opportunities that we can see things that could be incorporated here.
Yeah, no, I think, look, I know Scott wants to say something, but I'll just jump in. To give you an idea, guys, some of the NPL clubs here would the parents of those kids from 12 through to 18s would be paying anything between $1,600 to $2,600 a year to play within that thing. And it's a big bugbear of mine because having come from the UK where I understand and how football works, it almost becomes it's almost an elitist sport here at that level.
Well, that's what and people say, yeah.
And the reality is that's not what it should be. We want to get in Australia the best players playing at the best level with the best coaching and the number of hours that they can, so Australia in future years can be successful. Mm-hmm. How we do that and how we implement that, I suppose that's down to Mr. Sherman and his board back up at Sydney. But
well, there was some suggestion on the panel and a strong suggestion that depending on the category, that to be a category 4 or 3 or whatever the case may be, it's a non-user pay model.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So in essence, people at the club who are involved are investing in the player, but you have to protect that investment then. That's only legitimate. Mm-hmm. And also then, some clubs will be asking the player to contribute to their own investment, their own development, and that's legitimate. And I think then it's just a case of, well, we have to make sure that an investment made by the parent in their child is an investment in the child, that's where it goes.
Yeah.
I think to relate it back to certainly Wales and in the South Wales area in terms of the semi-pro stuff, so your top-end Welsh League, the academies there, I would probably imagine a parent would probably pay £400, $800, is it, roughly?
Yeah.
At the maximum, really.
Mm.
And it's probably something, I guess, that you could compare to the type of clubs that we've got here, the semi-professional style clubs. Yeah. Rob, thank you very much for joining us. We've still got a couple of questions, but if anyone does have any questions that they'd like to pose to Rob or the guys here in the studio, please drop us a comment or question in the Facebook post. But Craig?
Yeah, Rob, just I suppose, we're running a little bit behind now, but just a question for me. You're a couple of weeks, months into the role. We fast forward 12 months, where would you like to see football in that 12 months? And then, you know, fast forward it 3 years, what's the vision of Rob Sherman and the FFA in terms of that elite player pathway?
Well, I think for me, the elite pathway would be that we'd have a strong international department with international activity on a regular basis, that there'd be an academy structure, you know, where, as you be aware, there's the star system here, 1, 2, 3, at least 3-star, if not a 4-star introduced, and the number of clubs operating at 4, 3, 2, and 1, and that, you know, those clubs are delivering high-quality programs, and that's across the whole spectrum. They're supported by a robust, you know, by the federations with the right sort of talent support programs, and that basically the pathway's evident. People know what they get at each level, and, you know, hopefully are being steered towards that, and everyone's working in unison for the benefit of the player. That would be the vision. Obviously, you know, everyone's got a role to play. Everyone's got to have an input into how that evolves. But in truth, we haven't got time to delay. It needs to start, and it needs to start straight away.
Rob, thank you very, very much for joining us. We'd love to have you on a future episode as well, and maybe when you're down here in Melbourne and get you into the studio. But an absolutely riveting discussion that we've had over the last 60 minutes, and something that's very, very relevant to I suppose, all aspects of football here in Australia. So we wish you absolutely all the very best with your new role as TD up at FFA, and certainly with the whole review that is underway.
Thank you, Tomji, and thanks to the lads. Good to hear you, and hopefully catch up sometime soon.
Cheers, Rob.
Cheers, Rob. All the best, Bob.
Rob Sherman, the technical director at Football Federation Australia. Gentlemen, that brings us to the end of tonight's show. But before we go, Craig, did you want to just say a few more last words about the coaching clinic, the Cardiff City Coaching Clinic at Point Cook Soccer Club? That's at Saltwater Reserve. Can parents, if they're still interested, sign up, or is it too late?
Yeah, no, they can still turn up tomorrow. We start at 9:30 through till 3 tomorrow, Thursday and Friday. The guys will be doing all the coaching sessions, and unless they hit the bar tonight, which I'm going to try and keep them out so we get them home to bed. But look, we're there to have a bit of fun over the next couple of days, teach them a few new tricks, teach them a few new skills. And like I said at the start, trying to get them to understand what it's like to be coached by, you know, top European
absolutely.
Coaches.
Hopefully so. We can get a little bit of footage as well, or maybe some photographs, and on stay tuned to the Football Out West News Facebook page. That no doubt will happen in the next few days. Gentlemen, once again, thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. It was an absolute pleasure having you guys in the studio. Wish you all the very best for the remainder of your stay here in Australia, and with all of your responsibilities at Cardiff City.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for staying with us for the last hour. It has been a very interesting conversation. We look forward to next week when, unfortunately, Craig, you're not going to be here, but we've got a special guest co-host for next week's show, and we'll reveal that a little bit later this week. But we will have as our club focus next week, I believe it is going to be Barnstoneworth United, and they'll be in the studio, and they've got a very, very colourful story to tell about their club. So on behalf of everyone here at FNR Football Nation Radio, my name is Tonchi Prusak, and on behalf of
Craig Filer
and Josh Parrish, our panel operator, a very, very good night. And listen to Football Nation Radio again next week this time. Bye.